Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. DACA turns 12 this year. President Obama announced DACA on June 15th, 2012.
These are young people who study in our schools. They play in our neighborhoods. They're friends with our kids. They pledge allegiance to our flag. They are Americans in their heart, in their minds, in every single way but one, on paper.
The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program applied to young people brought into the U.S. with no lawful status as children. DACA allowed them temporary deportation protections, work permits, and social security numbers. It's not a permanent fix. DACA is a stopgap measure overseen by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. DACA has since then been challenged several times in the courts and the executive office. The Department of Homeland Security in 2017, under then-President Trump, initiated a phase-out of the program. District Judge Andrew Hanen declared DACA illegal in 2021. The U.S. Supreme Court has yet to review its legality. Despite numerous challenges, DACA remains in place, but with limitations. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services can no longer accept or process new DACA applications. Hundreds of thousands of young undocumented students in school today are too young to qualify for DACA because they came to the U.S. after the required arrival date of 2007. Meanwhile, the effort to pass comprehensive immigration reform fails in session after session of Congress. The nonprofit immigrant advocacy group United We Dream is an immigrant youth-led network that fights for the dignity and fair treatment for the 11 million undocumented immigrants in the U.S., including DACA recipients. Today, we're talking to Juan José Martínez Guevara, the Texas Advocacy Manager for United We Dream. He's a DACA recipient. We're also speaking with United We Dream member Judith B., who wishes to be identified by her first name only because of her undocumented status. She is not a DACA recipient, even though her twin sister is. Judith is a recent graduate from Texas A&M University and is applying to medical school. Martinez Guevara says he struggled with the knowledge that the government knows about his status when he applied for DACA.
Yes, that was in my mind, especially being advised by my parents at the time. I was must have been 14 or, you know, a teenager. Of course, there was a lot of uncertainty. We saw that it would be a trade-off, right? We understood it would be a certain level of protection, but in exchange, we did have to disclose pretty much like all of our previous residency information, our history here in the United States. And so that would be essentially handing over a record to the government saying, you know, I've been undocumented in this country, here, and for this long. And so I think that was definitely a concern. I think that's also partly why it is so important to have permanent protections. We know that DACA was just a Band-Aid solution designed at the time in 2012. You know, it is not a permanent protection for people in my situation. And so that's essentially why we need permanent protections, because we've disclosed this information and we need to have a greater sense of security.
Well, before we talk a little bit about making these protections more permanent, I want to hear your story, Judith. So I understand you are not receiving DACA protections, yet your twin sister is. Can you sort of go back in time and tell us a little bit about the process to where you are now?
Yeah, so I'll preface by saying both of my siblings got DACA, you know, the year that it came out. My older siblings got DACA the year that it came out. For DACA, you need to have there's a minimum age requirement of being 15. So whenever DACA was initially removed in September of 2017, me and my twin sister were not 15 yet. And so we applied in December of 2020 when it reopened. But because we have the same first and last name and birthday, of course, because we're twins, our lawyer made a decision to send our paperwork a day apart. So she sent her paperwork December 22nd and she sent my paperwork December 23rd, just to avoid any confusion with our applications, and generally there is a lot of confusion since all we have different is our middle name. My twin sister got approved in June 6th of 2021, and then DACA was obviously blocked July 16th, 2021. So there was a good amount of time during the 5 weeks in between that, but my application was not approved in time, unfortunately. And so, yeah, that's where I'm at currently. I've been just on hold since then.
Obviously, without DACA protections, you don't have these work permits, you don't have a social security number. I know a lot of people are wondering, well, you know, geez, how do you make it through life? You are obviously a Texas A&M grad, so obviously education is not a problem. But now that you are thinking of applications for medical school, is your current status presenting you as an obstacle, Judith?
I will say yes. I'll go back to that first thing that you mentioned, and people generally wonder, you know, what to do in this situation. And my ideology or my mindset is to just do as much as I can until I have that opportunity to have that work permit and social security number, right? So, you know, I've graduated with my bachelor's, which was still more difficult than somebody with DACA or, you know, with citizenship, but everything with DACA is always hard anyway. But for medical specifically, there's a requirement of having at least a green card to apply for Texas medical schools. It is difficult. I can't apply here in Texas. And I actually already applied for medical school last year. And I applied out of state to all the schools that I could apply out of state. I did get many interviews to very prestigious medical schools, Boston Medical School and the University of Pittsburgh, which are top 10 and top 30 ranked medical schools. But even though I did get accepted into medical school, the cost is very high. It's about 70 grand per year. And I tried to find, you know, financial loans and stuff, but there really is no bank that's going to give me that much money unless I have a really, really, really good cosigner, a U.S. citizen cosigner. And so that process was very difficult and mentally draining, I will say. I think now I'm working on improving my application, because the schools that I did get accepted to were not immigrant friendly. So I'm trying to see if I can improve my application to for immigrant friendly schools or see if I'm young, right? So I'll see about waiting until I do have some sort of status for medical school.
So Juan, you deal every day with United We Dream in helping individuals who are on DACA, who are undocumented. This organization is working to help uplift them. And so you're hearing this story by Judith. What kind of support does United We Dream offer? Because there are many people who are here in the United States without any papers who are living under this anxiety. And even DACA recipients themselves have anxiety because of this instability and uncertainty in the courts.
Yes, for sure. That is something we hear a lot from, you know, our members, is this sense of anxiety that they feel, rightfully so, because DACA is so temporary. And like you mentioned earlier, is consistently being attacked in the courts. And so at United We Dream, we are not a service provider org, but we do a lot of things to support our members. We have an UndocuHealth program that aims to support people through those feelings of anxiety, through those feelings of uncertainty in the face of all this policy back and forth with our lives. It is not just about whether DACA is going away or not, but it's really, what job will I have next year? What schools will I be able to apply to? Will I be able to support my parents, my family? And so our UndocuHealth program really aims to support our members in navigating that, those feelings and that uncertainty. We also provide a sense of community and collective care for our members. It is so important when you are being attacked by these policymakers so often to be able to have a community and a support network. And so we aim to provide that so that folks know that they are not alone, right? Like I mentioned earlier, I'm a DACA recipient myself. And it is so great to be able to know that there are other people I can lean on and who are going through very similar things to me. We do Know Your Rights trainings, especially right now in Texas with the SB 4 law. We've been doing a lot to provide our members with information so they can protect their rights, but also protect their families and their loved ones and be able to share that information. And lastly, I'd say, along with that sense of community, one of the greatest things we give our members is the ability to really use their voice and take action. We want to empower young people to know that DACA itself was a win coming from immigrant youth advocating for their rights and for justice. And that was a win that was able to be achieved by immigrant youth. And we want to show that with consistent fighting and in this community, we can continue to materialize more wins for ourselves, right? We don't have to be under DACA forever. We don't have to watch DACA go away. We can fight for permanent protections for everyone. Those are just some of the few things we provide. But ultimately, it comes down to collective care, right? We care for one another. We care for our members. And we want them to know that they are not alone. Because being undocumented right now with all the anti-immigrant rhetoric and DACA being in the courts, it can be really, really isolating and really demoralizing. But there's always, you know, that hope and that fight to be had.
Juan José Martínez Guevara is a DACA recipient and is the Texas Advocacy Manager for United We Dream, the leading immigrant youth network in the U.S. Judith B. is an undocumented immigrant who does not have DACA protections. She's a recent graduate from Texas A&M and is applying to medical school. When we come back, political campaigns have turned immigrants into political targets.
There's been so much rhetoric that has been used that has dehumanized immigrants, and that has been really concerning. But at the end of the day, we know that no one is going to save us but our communities.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Immigration is the number one problem for voters in the U.S., according to a recent Gallup poll. Republican states are passing laws like SB 4 in Texas. Among other things, SB 4 allows state and local law enforcement to arrest suspected illegal crossers, a power only granted to federal immigration officers. A federal appeals court put the controversial law on hold in March. Texas Governor Greg Abbott's immigration enforcement effort, Operation Lone Star, has stationed Texas state troopers on the border in an effort to deter illegal immigration and asylum seekers. Troopers are laying miles of concertina wire on the border and have erected a floating border barrier on a small stretch of the Rio Grande. The nonprofit group United We Dream is working to support millions of undocumented people in the U.S. who are feeling pressure and anxiety from these new policies and from hateful anti-immigrant rhetoric. We're talking to United We Dream member Judith B., who wishes to be referred to by her first name because of her undocumented status, and with Juan José Martínez Guevara, Texas Advocacy Manager for United We Dream. Martinez Guevara says the organization is doing its best to help its members with so many attacks coming from so many different directions at the same time.
On the point of the rhetoric, yes, it's been pretty difficult recently to see so many politicians use anti-immigrant rhetoric, even politicians that previously, like you said, expressed support for permanent protections and a pathway to citizenship. There's been so much rhetoric that has been used that has dehumanized immigrants, and that has been really concerning. But at the end of the day, we know that no one is going to save us but our communities, and that's why we are so invested in building up the power of our community and the power of our members, and to let them know that they are powerful. There is so much going on. Yes, there is a lot of anti-immigrant attacks happening. Like you mentioned, there is the litigation against DACA. There is also SB 4 in Texas. And now there are states that are trying to follow Texas's lead and advocating for their own version of SB 4 or similar legislation. For us, we support our members in providing, again, these wellness resources, ways to navigate these really exhausting times. And beyond that, we also aim to equip them with Know Your Rights training. So we let them know, here are constitutional rights that protect all undocumented people, all people in the U.S., right? That includes undocumented people. And so here is what you can do if you are find yourself in a situation with law enforcement. But ultimately, the way we're kind of navigating it is trying to have a understanding, a holistic understanding of the environment that we're in. And we're not just sitting on the sidelines while these attacks happen. We're taking action, we're mobilizing, we're organizing to block these harmful bills from passing. And that is really where the fight needs to go. We need folks to be outraged. We need folks to be taking action. We need people who are allies of immigrants to also be out with us hand in hand, protesting against these bills, making sure they don't pass, and creating such a loud message that we will not stand for this, that it makes it impossible, right, for these politicians to implement these really hateful laws.
And Judith, I'm curious to hear how you've been able to keep up and manage, again, all of these different efforts to try to deport people, to eliminate DACA, to crack down on asylum seekers. I mean, it's got to be overwhelming. And I'm curious to hear how you manage to maybe find your inner peace somehow. How do you balance your life out?
This is a great question. I think generally the way that I keep my mental health throughout all of this is probably the support from my family. Like I mentioned earlier, all of my siblings have DACA and my parents will naturalize soon through my older sister who got married. And so I think I have a lot of support from them because I am the only one in the family in this situation and they probably feel guilty to some extent. And I'm always trying to make sure they understand I'm doing okay regardless. But besides that, I will say my main coping mechanism and what generally drives me through school and my goals and everything is probably being a member of United We Dream and within that being an activist and an advocate for people in my situation. And I've been an advocate since I graduated high school and I, you know, spoke out about it at my high school graduation. Generally, I don't attend protests and physical events, you know, because of that fear. But I do a lot of sharing my story because I know it's important and it's valuable. And I feel like that's one of the main reasons people don't understand the struggles because they really can't humanize those struggles to like an actual person, right? So that's, I think, one of the main things that I do is, you know, be part of the movement and continue to be a mentor for people that are in my situation that are trying to go to medical school or that are just trying to do school and let them know, hey, you know, it's hard, but you can do it. And despite it being difficult, it is definitely possible. Also here at Texas A&M, while I was here, I joined a student organization that was created, actually co-founded by the current United We Dream executive director, Grace Martinez. And I think having that like support from people that might have similar experiences at this predominantly white institution was probably the best thing in terms of like my mental health and in terms of me continuing to have that motivation to continue, you know, school and my goals and all of that. 100%. I think being able to talk to people within that same situation is probably the best part. And we support each other through everything. And we're all putting in the work to be part of the movement.
I'd like to ask this question of each of you, if you all are comfortable answering it. But I'd like to hear, Judith, your story of why your family chose to come to the United States.
Yeah, of course. So we immigrated to the U.S. when I was 2 years old, almost three. And the main reason, I think, was financial hardship. I mean, my siblings and my parents always joke that they were very well financially in Mexico until they had, obviously, me and my twin sister. And twins were hard and we were, I guess, high maintenance, unfortunately. But the main reason was financial hardship. Half of my dad's family was also here in the U.S. And also my parents wanted a better future for us in terms of school. Almost all of my cousins and a couple of my uncles and aunts have, you know, engineering degrees in Mexico, and they're not, unfortunately, working with those degrees because there's not jobs for that in Mexico currently. And so my dad saw that and he realized our opportunities would be much greater here in the U.S. And so we have been here since I was 2 years old.
Well, I mean, it's very interesting what you said. And this is the case, I think, with many immigrant families where you do have professionals from other countries, not necessarily Mexico, but even from India, from China, from Cuba. They have advanced degrees and they sacrifice their professions in order to use the cliche and for a better life. And so I thought it's really interesting that you mentioned that.
Yeah, almost all of my family or my cousins in Mexico have those advanced degrees. And and they're engineers, and none of them are, you know, I think one of them's an Uber driver, another one has a bakery, and, you know, another one is here in the U.S. now, not working with his engineering degree, but it just was not going to work out for them, unfortunately. And my parents saw that early on and realized that we would be much better going through grade school and everything here than in Mexico, probably.
And what about you, Juan? How did your family come to the U.S.? When and for what reasons?
My parents made the decision to come to the U.S. definitely based on financial hardship that they were enduring in Mexico at the time. They were a young couple. They had my older brother. I think the catalyst for pushing them to make that decision, the difficult decision to leave, all the support they had from their parents, their family, was that my older brother was having some health issues when he was younger, and they were taking him to doctors, but they couldn't really find a solution for it. And so they felt that coming to the U.S. would give them a better chance of having that be addressed and feel more comfortable being able to support my brother, my older brother. And so they essentially made the decision to come over. And luckily, my older brother did get better. It was confined to his childhood. It was not extended past that, which is good. But definitely, they wanted to keep the family together. They wanted to have access to more opportunities, not even for themselves, but really for my older brother and myself, is what they consistently say. And yeah, they've been very proud to see what they've been able to build here, the ways they've been able to find a community in Dallas, the opportunities they've been able to provide my older brother, myself, and my younger brothers in the U.S., and they love their home here. My dad had this dream of going back to Mexico to be able to be in the land. He was from a more rural area, and he always loved being out in nature, having horses. And so recently, he was actually able to buy a small plot of land in Dallas to have that dream here. And he's told me recently that he used to have these dreams where he would wake up in the middle of the night feeling like he was on like his way back to Mexico and he had missed his flight, and he was really, you know, rattled by that. But ever since he was able to buy his own land here and have a few horses, he no longer has that recurring dream. And so for him, it's a sense of like he has some degree of stability. He has something here that makes this home as well.
There has been some efforts by the current administration to advance or expand DACA protections, and one of those was announced recently, though maybe by the time this conversation airs, it might be put on hold by the courts. You never know with DACA and with politics. But the Affordable Care Act, many DACA recipients now are eligible to join the Affordable Care Act marketplace starting in November. So can you talk to us a little bit about that, Juan?
Yes, for sure. So with the Affordable Care Act expansion for access to undocumented folks, that is something that, you know, we definitely had requested. We were pushing that for many years, and it was a huge victory to see it announced. We drove public comments to make sure our communities were included in that process and in that decision. And so we really did that because we believe that everyone deserves healthcare access. You shouldn't have to have citizenship or a piece of paper to really tell you that your health matters and your wholeness as a person matters. And that is why we advocated. We don't think, again, that healthcare is a privilege. Healthcare should be a right that everyone has access to. But that also highlights that DACA is still a very limited program. It does not cover all youth. There's actually a new generation of youth that are not covered under DACA and won't be covered under DACA. And that is why we need permanent protections. If we find value in providing folks with healthcare access, we should be able to expand that and make sure that as many people as possible have access to that. If DACA is taken away through court order or through any sort of executive action in the future, those folks would no longer have that access to healthcare under the ACA. And again, we know that DACA is in the courts, we're battling in the courts, but it's definitely an uncertain future. And that is why we need, again, permanent protections to make sure that everyone can access healthcare.
Well, Judith, I'm curious as to how you're navigating the whole healthcare aspect here in the U.S.
Probably my main drive to go into healthcare and apply to medical school and become a doctor is, you know, growing up here in the U.S., my family and myself, like, we didn't have that. And, you know, having to show up to the ER for, you know, basic things was part of my childhood. I'll say that that's my main drive to go into the medical field and be able to be an advocate in the medical field for Hispanics or minorities and, you know, underserved populations that don't have access to healthcare, because it is really a universal right. And we all should have access to healthcare because that's just so basic. I will say, I don't remember the last time that I've been to a doctor besides like the school clinic at the university. And that was just never part of me growing up. Now I can generally, I don't want to say self-diagnose, but I just generally just don't go to the doctor and I can figure out something on my own. I mean, I'm no longer insured or anything. It is unfortunate, but that, I will say, that's one of the reasons why I want to continue to be within the healthcare field and medical field.
Judith B. is a recent graduate from Texas A&M and is applying to from Texas A&M University and is applying to medical school outside the state of Texas. Judith's twin sister has DACA protections. She does not. We're also talking to Juan Jose Martinez Guevara, the Texas Advocacy Manager for United We Dream, the leading immigrant youth network in the U.S. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marianne Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.